Blog Talk Radio.
Today's episode of the A New Day Show. I am your host, Dynamic Daphne, and I'm super excited about the show today. Again, I am broadcasting out of New York today because I'm down here doing double duty. I am doing the show and I'm doing some family, dealing with some family situations that I need to get done. So I'm super excited about this segment today, and I encourage you to call in. Happy Sunday. I'm praying that everyone had an amazing 4th of July. And above all, I hope you are keeping cool. I know I spoke with some of the host families, and they are relaxing on the beach out on Long Island. And I just, I'm excited that they're taking time out to enjoy their family. And if you are living in Connecticut or in the Westchester or Putnam County of New York, I need your support. I am still looking for some host families for the French Cultural Exchange Program. So why not send me a message on the show or go on the Facebook and contact me, because I really, really need your help for 5, 10, 11, or 20 days beginning July the 11th. So again, listen, give me a call, 860-355-9838 if you're in the Connecticut or the New York area. I would love your support. So today we are going to be talking about relationships, and we are going to be talking about what's possible in our life if we dare to dream. But before I do that, I want to share again from Celebrating 365 Days of Gratitude, which is one of the books that I co-authored. And I want to read for you three of the entries. The entry for July the 5th, the title is The Luckiest Man. This is an excerpt from Lou Gehrig's farewell speech given July 4th, 1939, in the Yankee Stadium in New York, New York. Fans, for the past 2 weeks, you have been reading about the bad break I got. Yet today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth. I have been in ballparks for 17 years and have never received anything but kindness and encouragement from fans. Look at these grand men. Which of you wouldn't consider it the highlight of his career just to associate with them for even one day? Sure, I am lucky. When the New York City Giants, a team you would give your right arm to bear, to beat, and vice versa, sends you a gift that's something, when everybody down to the groundkeeper and those boys in the white coats remember you with trophies, that's something. When you have a father and a mother who work all their lives so you can have an education and build your body, it's a blessing. When you have a wife who has been a tower of strength and show more courage than you dreamed existed, that's the finest I know. So I close by saying that I may have had a tough break, but I have an awful lot to live for. And that's gratitude, because each of us need to take time to acknowledge the different gratitudes in our lives. I will move on to the entry for July the 6th, and this comes from June Palmer, and the title is Grateful for My Season of Crisis. And for those of you who have followed me or listened to my show for a while, you know that I am an advocate for taking advantage of your adversities. Learn the lessons, because there are lessons in all of our adversities to learn from. And June starts the statement by saying, in July 2000, at 41, I suddenly lost my job as VP of marketing and faced 14 months of devastating unemployment. My confidence and self-esteem were shattered, and it pained me to watch our savings disappear and debts begin to mount. To make matters even more stressful, if that was possible, in August 2011, I was diagnosed with melanoma. In October 2001, recuperating at home from my surgery, I was truly grateful to God to be alive and hopefully cancer-free. I prayed for the Lord's guidance and wisdom on what I was to do with my life, and it became clear that I was to start my own business. In November 2001, I started my first of many businesses, and I have achieved some substantial growth by focusing on serving our customers and unique market and business building solutions, and by providing world-class service. I am grateful for my seasons of crisis because my priorities have shifted from building a life full of acquiring things to focusing on how I can use my services to make a difference in the lives of others. My passions are feeding the hungry and rehabbing homes for low income in Chester County, Pennsylvania. So you see, as I always mention about learning from our adversities or taking advantage of the adversities, because sometimes when we focus on only overcoming the adversities, there tend to be a struggle. But when you can dissect the adversities and take out the lessons learned, because trust me, I can tell you from personal experience, that there will be many lessons in the adversities. The reason why we stick on them for all our life's journey is because we have not prioritized the lessons in there. So I hope you can learn from Jim Palmer's entry here about gratitude, grateful for my season of crisis. The next one I want to read for you, or next two I want to read, I want to read the one for July the 7th, and that's from Holly Shebert. I don't want to butcher her name, so let me spell it for you. It's K-A-W-A-K-A-N-M-I. And she is grateful for normal is wonderful. What a difference a year makes. 1 year ago, I underwent a major surgery following my 6 rounds of chemotherapy. Thinking of those days, I am grateful for all who watched over me after surgery and helped me through recovering and all the weeks of chemo. The treatments were hard. There were doctors and many nurses, but it takes a village. I am grateful for my village, provided care and from near and far, laughter, warmth, and millions of tiny acts of kindness. To be connected to such kindness truly helped me heal. I felt lost, but I still felt connected. Today, I am living in recovery. This side of wellness, I am grateful for my physical self, my new hair, my keen appetite, my strong muscles. Being normal is so nice. Through it all, I am grateful that the essence of me was recognized and came through. I am more than an illness. I was just an ill person. I do not know why this happened. I do know that I learned so much about gratitude and compassion. May those life lessons enable me to be more caring and compassionate to all those who my path cross. That is so true. In life, you know, this is such an on-time entry to be reading, because today we are talking about relationships. And a lot of times we have different people in our lives for different seasons, different times. And a lot of times, especially those people who are close to us, they experience situations and circumstances in their lives, and we tend to hold it against them instead of seeing them for who they are, the children of God. Not their situation, not their drugs, not all the other issues that they are faced with, but who are they? Embrace the person. Just like we tell our children, I like you, I love you, however, I do not like your behavior and your attitude. And that is so important. Even as adults, we ought to learn to separate who people are from the things that they do, because that is powerful. I want to read one more, and this is gratitude for Mrs. Carvana. I am grateful for Mrs. Carvana. The transition from kindergarten to elementary school was difficult for me. What other students found easy, I found difficult. I was placed in the slow group for whom volunteer moms would come in to sit in a circle and help us to learn how to read. 30 years later, this memory of being different remains clear to me. All of this changed in grade 3. thanks to Mrs. Cavan, I remember her classroom being filled with energy and love. Not only that, but she acknowledged and rewarded me for the things I was good at. There was a class project where we created a class cookbook, and each of us provided a recipe and brought it in our dish to share. I prepared a fruit salad display in an interesting manner, and it was a success. Each Friday, Mrs. Cavan would check the neatest out of our desk and rewarded those of us who had a neat and manageable desk. I excelled and was rewarded. Mrs. Cavan set me up for future academic success, as I have since achieved both a bachelor's and a master's degree. Praise the Lord. Who would have thought this to be possible? Thank you, Mrs. Cavan. And this is from Christy Hayden. Christy Hayden. You know, this is the story of many children, because as you and I know so well, is that our children are unique beings. We learn differently, we act differently. And, you know, not all teachers are meant to be teachers, because there are a lot of teachers who are just there for the paycheck. They have no interest in helping our children learn. And I just want to applaud this teacher who saw something in this young person and helped this young person to blossom. So I don't know that she's hearing the show today, but if she's no longer here, I know the angels will take it to her. So I want to share from this book. For those of you who have been listening for a while, remember months ago when I started from the book, Darian Kagan, What's Possible? 50 True Stories of People Who Dare to Dream, that they could make a difference. And as always, I encourage you to call into the show, 646-915-8166. If you have a question, if you have a remark or a feedback, I welcome them. If you are in the chat room and you want to call, you just need to dial 646-915-8166. And you can as well type your questions if you are in the chat room. So today, I want to share, and I'm not sure if we'll finish the book today. However, I want to begin today's story from a gentleman by the name of Cameron Johnson. And Cameron Johnson became a millionaire at age 15, guys. Age 15. Can you imagine? So, for those of you who have children, listen to what they're saying. Don't try to have your lives being lived through them, because a lot of us as parents, we are looking for our children to do the things that we did not accomplish when we were young. Listen to them. Here, this young man was a millionaire at age 50. And his story begins with making money for fun. Who would not love that? Like a lot of people, I had big dreams of making millions of dollars. There was one big obstacle that most people would see in me when I started out. I was just a kid. I started going after my dream when I was 8 years old. Where other people see obstacles, I see adventure. I'm 23 years old now. That means I have been chasing my big success, my big business dreams for 15 years. I was only 8 years old when I sent my first official business letter to Donald Trump. I'd watch Home Alone 2, Lost in New York with Malachi Coligan, and wanted to do something he had done. Donald Trump had a cameo appearance in the movie because it was filmed at the Plaza in New York. So I begged my parents to take me to New York City. My parents were wise and made a deal with me. They said, if you get straight A's, we'll take you to New York City this summer. I was in the fourth grade at the time, so getting A's was fairly easy. Since my parents also did what they said they would do, I knew I was going to New York City. What my parents didn't know was that I really wanted to see the suite that was filmed in the movie. I wasn't sure how to go about doing that. So I wrote a letter to Donald Trump and addressed it to Mr. Donald Trump, Trump Plaza, New York City. The letter said, Dear Mr. Trump, my name is Cameron Johnson. I am 8 years old. I am from Roanoke, Virginia. You probably don't know who I am because I'm just a kid. And I told him details about myself and when my family was going to arrive. I had no idea if it would ever get to him. In fact, I never heard back. Oh, well. When we checked in the hotel, the receptionist turned to us and said, You must be Cameron. My mom totally freaked out. The receptionist continued to say, Mr. Trump received your letter and he's sorry he couldn't meet you personally, but he understands that you want to see the suite where the movie was filmed. He actually arranged for your family to stay in the suite the entire time you are here. He's also arranged for you to take the talk boy recorder that McClay Culligan used in the movie, and he has arranged for you to have a private tour of the FAO Schwartz tomorrow morning. You will have a gift basket waiting with cooking and an I Love You New York t-shirt. He left me a signed business card, and a stock of it all was huge. My mom was really mad at me at first, but she got over it. When the next day at FAO Schwartz, I told my dad I needed a business card to give back to Mr. Trump. So I had business cards made with my name, Cameron Johnson, my home address, and at the suggestion of my dad, entrepreneur, in bold letters. I didn't even know what that meant. But my dad said it would make a great impression. I left him a note when we checked out, along with one of my cards. I'll never forget that moment as long as I live. I guess the term entrepreneur was a good choice because I was always selling stuff. Lemonade stands, fresh vegetables door to door. I love all of it. I soon get my eyes on getting a computer, not for video games like most kids, but to sell more stuff. I got my first computer when I was 12, and it changed my life almost immediately. The computer had software that allowed you to print greeting cards, announcements, and even business cards. It had templates that you could use to customize your cards. My mom had a party coming up for the holidays, and I told her that for $15, I would print all of her invitations. That's right. A business was born. I stayed at it, doing cards and invitations for all my mom's friends and neighbors. In about 2 years, I had saved around $4,000. I upgraded my computer and was set to expand my business when something brand new was born on the internet, eBay. My conscience, my six-year-old sister, had been collecting Beanie Babies. I offered to buy her whole collection for $100. To a kindergarten, $100 is like a zillion dollars. And she went crazy. I immediately got on eBay and sold them all within days for $1,000, $900 profit. For the record, I've since paid her back $900 interest. Things grew rapidly, even though I had no idea what I was doing. I would just ask for whatever I wanted, and amazing things would happen. For example, I was able to find a supplier for my Beanie Babies, and at the age of 14, I was ordering direct from selling direct. My mom got me a custodial checking account and a Visa check card. I thought I really arrived. I was taking and shipping 40 orders a day right out of my bedroom. To keep my expenses down, I used the free priority mailing package from the post office and did all my ordering online. I was young, but somehow I just stumbled along and figured it out. I made $50,000 selling Beanie Babies that year. My dual life began, and one hand, I was a normal kid with Boy Scout soccer and homework. On the other hand, I was the owner of a booming business. Things really took off when I started a free email service for kids. Ad revenue brought in the money. I started winning awards and worldwide recognition, but I swear I still felt like a normal 14-year-old. I want to welcome guests 9810 to the show and 9298. Feel free to call in at 646-915-8166 if you have any question, if you have any remarks or feedback. Over the next couple of years, between school and athletics, I ran an internet operation that was making $15,000 a day in revenue. When I put out a press release about my success, it was picked up worldwide, and all the crazy things. I become famous in Japan. Someone there wrote a book about me, a 15-year-old millionaire CEO, sensation from America. When I traveled there with my parents, people would mob me. A Japanese company made me a board member and sent me $1 million promoting me, setting up speaking tours, and getting me extensive television coverage. One girl asked me to autograph her $600 Pandora purse. I didn't know anything about that stuff, and my dad told me that my mom didn't even have one of those. I took out my Sharpie and wrote Cameron Johnson across it. She loved it, but my mom would have fainted if she had known I just signed a Pandora. Then I'd come back home and go back to being a normal high school kid. It was an amazing time, and much has come out of all those experiences. I have had so many wonderful experiences that have convinced me repeatedly that in life you just have to ask for what you want. This isn't to say that there haven't been obstacles. Well, obstacles, as far as other people would see a kid trying to compete in an adult's world. Other people would see a kid trying to balance going back and forth between grown-up world and a kid world. But I learned something more important than business lessons. With my early success, I learned that obstacles are there only if you see them. If you look past them, things are much easier. I am now at the ripe age of 23. I spent my time focusing on speaking worldwide to various groups of entrepreneurship, and I have several web-based businesses and a book title you call The Shot. In my ways, I'm still a little kid who sent off a letter to Donald Trump. Every day I woke up with a gleam in my eye, ready to ask the world for amazing things and watch what comes back. My advice is focus on the spark and your passion and not on other people and what other people look at or call some obstacles. You can learn more about Cameron Johnson at CameronJohnson.com. Now, this is Darian's takeaway from Cameron's story. Cameron is like many of the people featured in this book. The hardest part about interviewing them was getting them to talk about problems and challenges. They simply don't see them. Hey, Cameron, what about the fact that you were just a kid? I didn't think about it. He shrugged. He was having too much fun. It's a great lesson we all can learn from. This is not to say most of us won't face problems and challenges in going for our dreams, but I honestly believe that what you think about expands. Dwell on the problems and challenges, and they will become bigger. Focus on your dream and your vision, your passion, and that is what will expand and flourish. Isn't that an amazing story? Yes, we have 54 minutes remaining. Please call in 646-915-8166. We are discussing today some of the stories from Darren Kagan's book, What's Possible? 50 True Stories of People Who Dare to Dream. And I know that each and every one of us can learn from Cameron's story. Each and every one of us. Why don't we learn a lesson from the things we are going through instead of focusing on what we can't and cannot do? Keep focused. They say if you keep your eyes, you know, if you're a dart player, everyone who tosses a dart to the dartboard is going for the bullseye. Because the reason we do the bullseye is because we know that the scores there are higher. And as an entrepreneur, that's what we need to focus on. I'm going to share one more story, and it goes from Michelle Hoskins. Single mom and entrepreneur, Sweet Opportunity, it's her title. Becoming a divorced mother of three girls might not seem like the best time to make business dreams and become an entrepreneur. Yet, that's exactly what I did. Thanks to a recipe handed down from my great-great-great-grandmother, an epimanic slave. I am the great-great-great-granddaughter of America Washington, a former slave who was freed in 1886. America stayed on to work for the Mississippi family who owned her and her mother. She was a talented cook, looking at ways to please the family of picky eaters. Apparently, someone in the family didn't like the taste of molasses, so America developed a syrup recipe made of chunked butter, honey, and cream. That sounds good already. I haven't tasted it yet. America had 7 or 8 children and handed down the recipe to her third granddaughter. I'm not sure why, but the family tradition was born. The honey cream syrup recipe was to be handed down to the third daughter of each generation. It also became a wonderful part of my family's tradition. I can remember as a child going over to my grandmother and great-grandmother's house each Sunday. They would fix homemade waffles and the delicious syrup, more than 120 years old. America was emancipated. I found myself facing a difficult kind of freedom. Divorce. I was a school teacher with 3 daughters to raise. This would be a daunting task, but I was reading how in the 1980s, we're supposed to be a decade of the women. Women were engaging as the heads of companies and CEOs. I thought, wow, I would be part of that. I decided I was going to be an entrepreneur. Keep in mind, I had very little idea what that meant. I thought it meant being an independent and in control of my own destiny. that was good enough for me. In fact, I decided to be a successful businesswoman before I even decided what my business would be. One morning, it hit me, America Syrup. Everyone loved coming over to the family's house for Sunday breakfast. Surely, customers would like to buy it all as well. The first challenge was getting my mother to give up the recipe. My mother had three children, but I was her only daughter. So, technically, she should hand it down to me. I convinced her that she was actually passing it down to my youngest daughter, who was the third girl, and I had the idea to make it into a business. First, I tried making a big batch of American syrup on the stove and taking that around to local restaurants. This was pretty much a disaster because the syrup would separate and the restaurant told me it wouldn't work. I certainly was discouraged, but far from defeated. There were plenty of maple syrup on the store shelves, so I knew there had to be a way to make the syrup properly. I just had to figure it out. Finally, with my mother's help, we perfected the recipe, and a local Chicago company helped me with producing large batches of commercially. The company also helped with designing labels and bottles. That's where I hit another roadblock. There was no money to manufacture a large enough batch to sell. So I did what I had to, sold everything I had, and moved in with my mother, my three daughters, and I lived in her attic. I had the right product, the right bottle, the right label, and the right co-packer, and would make the syrup for me. But I couldn't afford to have the company bottle it. So I set up my mother's basement, use a funnel to pour the syrup into the individual bottles, pasting the labels by hand, and putting the bottles in a box ready to go to the local merchant. No doubt people thought I was a little crazy. Oh, yeah, they'd say, she's the lady down in the basement making syrup. Leave her alone. She's lost her mind. I saw myself as determined. I went around to local shops and made a deal with them. I asked them to put my syrup on their shelves. If it sold, I would come back and fill out the invoice. If it didn't, I would come back in 30 days and take it back. I had no advertisement or marketing budget, but I knew I had to create an illusion of movement. So I would come back in those stores and buy a few bottles myself. Then I would send a girlfriend in to buy a bottle. The store started thinking Michelle's syrup was flying off the shelves, and they ordered more. A couple of big breaks put me on the map. First, the buyer at Jewel Supermarket agreed to put me in all their stores if his grandson liked the product. Of course, this grandson did. The big order meant I would now afford to have my syrup bottled by the co-packer. I finally came out of the basement. That level of success was fine for a time, but I had bigger plans. I wanted national exposure. I set my sights on Denny's. This was the early 90s, and the Denny's chain was facing a lot of discrimination and diversity lawsuits. I saw doing business with me and America, an African American woman, was the answer to both of our challenges. I called the Denny's corporate office every Monday morning at 10:30 for 2.5 years. The company never took me seriously. I was too distracted by its troubles and many management changes. Finally, a man named Jim Adamson took over the company as part of his briefing. Someone told him about this woman who called every Monday at 10:30 a.m. Well, what does she want, he asked. He was told about my company, and he immediately saw the same huge opportunity I did. Denny's not only bought my syrup, it used my face in their national advertisement, helping the chain, which is with its image problem, and giving me the nation's exposure, the national exposure, excuse me, I was looking for. My company's relationship with Denny lasted almost 10 years. It was a great run, but now Michelle Food is really too big for that account. It's a national brand of 10,000 retail stores across the country. We have our own 45,000 square foot manufacturing facility in Cincinnati for making syrup and coffee syrup and co-packing and bottling. The big dream that was born when I first eyed my great-great-great-grandmother's recipe 25 years ago has certainly come true. I love the idea that her emancipation led to my financial freedom. I like to imagine her sitting on the porch in Mississippi, the recipe in her pocket, patting her leg, thinking that someday woman will be independent enough to do something great. Of course, it wasn't easy, and I made a lot of mistakes along the way. I probably spent $150,000 developing the syrup. It shouldn't have cost that much. That's why I made it my legacy to teach others how to turn their family recipes into businesses. Each month, I teach a class called From Recipe to Retail and Beyond. People come in with their family recipe right off the stove. I teach them how to formulate for manufacturing and cost factor and the business side of things. And I share my philosophy. Anything the man can conceive can be made manifested through hard work, perseverance, and faith. I also tell folks to think about treasures that might be in their grandmother's recipe box. So many people are looking for the next big thing. If you are still for a moment, you might just find that it has been waiting for you within your family all along. That's the gift my great-great-great-grandmother gave me. and the gift I gave my family. Two of my daughters work with me in the business. The syrup is still our family's treat. I am the grandmother now, and each Sunday you'll find me making homemade waffles with honey chump syrup for my grandbaby. What an amazing, amazing story. Yes, we have 39 minutes remaining, and I just want to take a brief commercial break.
SuperFastLinkBuilding.com. The biggest challenge for business owners and entrepreneurs like you is getting your site to show up on the first page of a Google search. It's been reported that Google often changes their search reporting methods multiple times in the same day. That's why you can't use just any search optimization company. The SEO company that you choose has to think fast and move even faster. At SuperFastLinkBuilding.com, we've designed and developed a unique system to start positioning your site closer to the top. Our complex system of websites and blogs, along with our proprietary algorithms, are pushing our clients' sites to page one every day. Your site will never rise on its own. You've got to do something about it. Subscribe today. SuperFastLinkBuilding.com.
I want to remind you, if you have not yet signed up to be a friend of the A New Day Show, I encourage you to do that today and to also leave us a comment and remark about what you think about the show. Also, please share the link with somebody else. We need your support. We need your feedback. We want to hear your thoughts about the show and whether it is helping to empower you. Remember, we are on twice a week. We are on Wednesdays between 10 and 12 Eastern Standard Time, a.m. And on Sunday evenings, we are on between 7 and 8:30 p.m. So any of those times. On Wednesdays, we deal with the education, inspiration, and empowerment of entrepreneurs and small business people. And on Sundays, we deal with things like relationship, overcoming adversities, or any other empowering situation that you have encountered in your life. If you think it is newsworthy and it can help somebody else to get out of the rut that they're in, I would love to hear from you, so I can have you share your story. We are also on Facebook. Check us out. We are on Facebook, A New Day Blog Talk Radio on Facebook. We are also, if you're in the Connecticut area, you can watch our TV show on A New Day TV show on Charter, SoundView, and Comcast. So we encourage you to support us there. And just check us out on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. So hook up with us there. So we're going to continue with one more story here from Chip and Ian Murray, Tying on Success, founders of Vineyard Vines, a specialty tie company. We are two brothers who hated commuting into Manhattan and hated our corporate jobs. So we walked away and made our dream come true, creating a company that celebrates our beloved Martha's Vineyard. There was just one hitch. We had to do it by charging tens of thousands of dollars on a credit card. Ian, we grew up spending every summer in Martha's Vineyard. We are big boating guys. We love to sail and to fish. Ship, I love the whole back to basics nature of vineyard. It's all about getting back to nature, spending time in the water with friends and family, clam bakes, skipping stones, and riding bikes on the beach. And we sure did daydream about that time when we were working our first job out of college. My brother and I were living at home with our parents in Connecticut and taking the train to Manhattan each day. I was working for a small PR firm, and I hated the job. I hated the commute. Chip, I was working at an advertisement firm. I liked the work, but I hated the attitude. One boss literally told me I needed to think inside the box. He didn't like the way I was trying to think of ways to sell an ad campaign for a client. That made me reconsider my boss and the whole corporate experience. Did I really want to become that person, to be promoted to that? I realized I didn't want that life. I walked into my business, my boss's office, and said, I quit. This isn't the place for me. And by the way, my brother and I are going to make nickets. My acting team leader told me, you're making a big mistake. You will never be able to do anything on your own. I called Ian and told him that what I had done. Ian, I guess I was too surprised because we had been joking around about quitting for a long time. I took Chip's cue, went into my boss's office and told him I quit too. That night, we had a couple of drinks in the train car bar. And on the way home, we told our parents, and our mom started to cry. No, how could you give up those jobs? She wanted to know, this is why you went to college, Chip. But we explained that we weren't afraid to take a risk. We were more afraid to look back with regret that we didn't go out and dream. We were inspired by the idea of making ties, taking a boring product and making it fun, kind of like Richard Branson did with Virgin Atlantic Airlines, or Howard Schwartz with Starbucks. Where were people who had been a staple of everyday life and seat on an airplane, a cup of coffee, and made it into something great and exciting. We wanted to do that with neckties. Ian, when I got my PR job right out of college, I went and bought one suit. I wore it every day for the entire time I was there. I had a couple of shirts. Every day I would wear one of my ties or borrow one from Chip's or my dad's ties. Whenever there was something interesting on it, people would comment. We realized that for a man, as long as you change your tie, you can create a new look. So we went looking for any tie with a fishing rod or a golf club and wasn't too blatant. but we couldn't find any. Ship, that's what inspired our idea, to give men ties to wear to work that would celebrate and reconnect them to the recreational lifestyle they truly enjoyed. We also noticed that there was nothing a man or a woman could buy in Martha's Vineyard souvenir shop that was a reminder of the island and the great time he or she had on vacation. So we decided to make ties and represent the finer things in life, the things people really love. And of course, we had no experience in the clothing business, and we had no money to finance our new venture. We figure we could learn the business because we both have always been entrepreneurs. I have a brand and we sell CDs and things. And Ship had a car detailing business while he was in college. For this money challenge, we did what money experts tell you were not supposed to do. We charge it. Before we quit our jobs, we signed up for every credit card we could have had our hands on. Ship, that's where Ian's attention to detail came in handy. Ian, with credit card cash advances, we could write a check for $5,000 and it would be interest-free for 90 days. I would pay it off with a new credit card on a day 88. It's something you are never supposed to do because you can end up in a bad situation. But we were completely aware of what we were doing. It seemed like a better option than taking a partner early on in getting some money. And we couldn't go to the bank because no one believed in what we were doing. We rang up about $40,000 in credit card debt. But we also had early signs that we were on the right track. We made 800 ties off the bat and sold all of them in the first few weeks. We had 40 prints and were specific to Martha's Vineyard. That's what reflected water on the island. One of Martha's Vineyard stores also had a store in the Nantucket. It sold the bluefish design over there. We sold just as many to Nantucket that first summer as we did in Vineyard. That's when we realized our idea was bigger than the Vineyard. Ian, not everybody caught on to our idea right away. A lot of stores told us, men don't wear ties anymore. This was in 1998, the height of the dot-com boom. There was a lot of casual wear in the office. Our answer was, look at what you're selling. Look at who you are selling to and what they're wearing it for. Men are still buying ties to wear to weddings, cocktail parties, graduation. Our ties became conversation piece. We were convinced men would pick up our ties before they would pick up a brown tie with red stripes on it. Ship We thought we might be done in 3 months, but Vineyard Vine just kept growing. We can now dress men, women, and children from head to toe in our product. We long ago paid off that credit card debt, but in 2006, we did $37 million. Our products are available in 600 stores across the country. The idea is that we have this brand. It's all about lifestyle. Ian, it has been an incredible 10-year ride. Now, guys, riding the train into corporate offices are wearing our ties, sporting lobsters, jeeps, parks, beaches, scenes, and turtles. But during the time, we have also lost both our parents to cancer. They each lived long enough to see our success, to know that they don't have to worry about us. The sobering exercise of losing both our parents has definitely kept us grounded. It's also given us a focus on our charitable giving. We tend to support cancer causes as well as organizations that reflect our love of the water. Ship. To anyone who is thinking about leaving the corporate world behind and taking the leap, I would encourage you to go for it. At the very least, start doing something on the side and see how it goes. Let that commuting time be your dream time. It's all about finding your passion and having no regrets. When you look back, is the risk as big as it seems? People tell us we are gusty for walking away from our jobs, but we knew if Vineyard Vines would work out, we would always go back and get some kind of job. Ian, but it looks like there will be no more train commuting for us. No more days when the big decision is, do I ride the train sitting forward or backwards? That's true, but a lot of guys on those trains are now wearing Vineyard ties. Darian's takeaway from Ian and Ship's stories is, Chip and Ian bring a life to the idea of doing what you love. It's not that making neckties was their calling. Rather, they really love Martha's Vineyard lifestyle. Claiming what love and passion led them to an incredible lucrative business and a way to celebrate that lifestyle. I believe people are drawn to authenticity and passion. If the brothers had dreamed up Vineyard with the idea of making $1 zillion, it wouldn't. I don't think they would experience the same level of success, no matter how impractical that is. Your passion, what do you enjoy in your off time? How would you turn that vacation into a vocation? I will take one more commercial break, and then I think we're going to have time for a couple more stories.
Hello and welcome to Dr. Daphne Clark Husson Radio Hour, and we're glad you're here. Hey, listen, get over to drdaphne.in right now and get your advertisement for only $10 placed on the International Bulletin Board. That's right, for only $10, you can have your message seen by our thousands of listeners. So get over there right now, drdaphne.in. We thank you for listening to the show, and we will continue with it now. Have a great day.
Yes, and we have 19 more minutes. Remember, you can still call in at 646-915-8166 and be part of this conversation. I want to hear from you. 646-915-8166. And I'm here. I'll take your questions. And, you know, I know there is a little of each and every one of us in these stories here, because it's a lot of fear that we encounter that prevent us from experiencing our success. So I hope that by sharing these stories with you, that you will be able to learn something from that. I want to share, I think we have time for one more story. It's the big, beautiful, and bodacious. Barb Wilkins and Lorna Kettler, cousins and owners of Bodacious Lifestyles Incorporated. We were two curvy cousins. We were large in everything we do and how we live our lives. We became frustrated that we couldn't find the kind of fun, sexy fashion that we craved. So we stopped looking around for clothes to fit us and created our own boutique and fashion line. Together, we are bodacious. Our moms are sisters and are both tweed, wheat and petite. We grew up playing together and borrowing from each other's closets. We still love clothes and fashion that we were growing up. We also love our bodies just as they are. Barb likes to use the word plump. It sounds sweet to her. She's also chusty, soft, large, and curvy. And if you need to know specifically, Barb wears size 20 and Lorna wears size 16. We say, celebrate your body, whatever size you are. But we didn't find a lot to celebrate when we tried to shop here in our hometown in Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia. We also wanted to wear what is fashion right now. We just want to wear it in our size. We found shopping to be frustrating and humiliating at times. To go into stores that had absolutely nothing for us, we felt neglected and left out. We would walk into a store and ask, "Do you have anything that would fit me?" The clerk would say, "No." Bob would say, "Well, that's a shame, because I would really like to spend money here. But I guess I will go spend it somewhere else." But she was thinking, where am I going to go? That's when our conversation started. We would ask ourselves like, such as, if you would imagine the perfect store, what would it be? What would it sell there? What would it like when you stepped in the door, what would it smell like? So we decided to create our own store and call it Bodacious. We don't call it a plus size store. We don't like that term. We carry sizes 10 to 24. So we don't like putting a label on it. We believe it's possible that one day there won't be terms like that. There will just be clothes that came to in different sizes, and the size on the tag will be the size in the garment. We sell fashion forward clothing. Not all sizes translate into larger size, but lot of them do. We offer the same styling and the same look, but cut to fit women's curves. There is misconception that all large size clothes needs to be so long that it covers your whole body and your bum, but that isn't the most flattering look. For example, we think skirts should be shorter than that, falling onto the hip bone. We also offer a complete different shopping experience. Ordinarily, we are curvy. Shopping for clothes is a matter of finding something that fits, not of choosing one color or style over another. All Bodacious women feel welcome and celebrated. We have a great variety of styles to fit different body types. Our boutique is 100 times better than even imagined it could be. But it certainly wasn't easy getting started. The first challenge was financing and how to get it. We went to the local credit union that knows about where for giving loans to women. Even with our good business plan, the bank manager didn't agree until we said, oh, our husbands both have jobs. Even with what they gave us, only $5,000 line of credit and a $5,000 loan. That's what we started our business with on $10,000. We were able to start small, though, because we began as a consignment business. There was no inventory to buy. We just emptied our own closet. Soon we had enough women eager to consign with us. In the very beginning, we discovered one designer and featured her, and we added one rack of new designs. Those all did very well, and we began to build on that. By our third year of business, we looked at each other and said, I hate dealing with consignment. At the point of 30 to 40% of our sales were new designs, we decided to take the lead. We called all our customers and asked them to collect their items, and the rest of the were donated to charity. The next day, we had our best day ever in the store. It turned out to be the right decision at the right time. It wasn't our original plan, but it's where the business took us. and we have learned to listen to the business. From that first $10,000, we expect to make $500,000 this year and double next year. Our own label and manufacturing are starting to take off. Bodacious label now feature a wrap dress designed in all colors and Kino style dresses, polka dots, flip skirts with beautiful angel knit tops. We are getting a lot of interest from our retailers who want to carry our line, and we are looking to open our second store. The best part is that we get to wear the pretty and feminine fashions we were craving. And we love challenging the way women think and talk about their bodies. It's really about changing the thought that our body is not okay. Women seem to encourage our other women and seem desperate all the time. But we are not about that. We truly welcome women of all sizes here. If you are too small to wear our clothes, we can buy some of our accessories. We live the idea of don't wait until you are a certain size to buy yourself pretty clothes. Don't wait for anyone else to create what you are looking for. And don't wait to go for a dream. That very thing you are looking for might be a great idea for your business. Every day, make sure that you do something to move forward toward your goal. Get it out there. Tell people about it. As for the money, you will be surprised how little money you can live on while your dream is getting started. So go for it. Give your big dream, bodacious life, a dream. What amazing stories. What amazing stories. Let us just hope that this has triggered you to go out and start your dream. Whatever it is, remember, no one else has to believe in your dream because it is yours. However, you need to believe it with every fiber of your being. I hope you were as excited about the stories I shared today as I was in sharing them with you. Please share this link with somebody else so that they can have their life empowered just like you are doing with yours. Remember that you were not created for mediocrity. You were destined for greatness. So do not let anyone tell you otherwise. You are filled with power. You can only manifest that which you believe in. I encourage you to join us again. I think this week we are having the show on Tuesday instead of Wednesday because I got to get the French students at the airport. And remember, if you are in Connecticut or in Putnam, Westchester County, Patterson, Brewster, anywhere of that area, if you are there, I need your help. So inbox me for the details about how you can open your hearts and homes to a French cultural exchange student for 5 days, 10 days, 11 days, or 20 days. Again, I thank you for your support. I look forward to seeing your remarks on the comments page of the show. And as always, stay the course. Don't you ever give up on yourself. Remember, if it is to be, it is up to you. You have the power to create that dream which you so desire. So I see you again the next time I'm on the air, and I want you to share this with somebody, because somebody needs to take control of their life. This is your host, Dynamic Daphne, saying so long, and thank you again for your support. Remember, you're created for a destiny, and I want you to follow through on that. So follow your destiny.
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
Praise him. Begin to thank him. Begin to praise him. Hallelujah. feeling? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change